You are listening to Fanther Tracks.
It's time to get all your Star Wars news in a single file. This is Cannon Fodder. Here are your hosts, Mark Mulcaster, Brian Cameron, Matt Booker, and Mark Newbold.
Grab your bookmarks, it's time to take cover as we unleash the Cannon Fodder of the Star Wars Galaxy of Literature. Cannon Fodder is the home of Fan Attacks Radio for everything Star Wars literature, from comics, books, magazines, artworks, and everything else that comprises the expanded universe of Star Wars. Every month we delve below the covers and what is new in Star Wars literature, analyse it and give it our honest assessment. We cast our eyes to the future and see what releases we can't wait to read, look back at classic releases, meet and talk with the talent creating the content, as well as discuss the latest literature news. It's been just over a year since we last sat down and recorded an episode, and we've made a few changes. We've changed up the lineup and also the content, but it's great to be back with our new show talking about the stuff that we love. So who are we? I'm Brian Cameron. I'm a book and comic collector. I've been collecting for over 30 years and have a penchant for variants and foreign language releases.
I'm Mark Newbold. I've got a penchant for the word penchant, and I also collect comics and books. Anything random, the more random, the better. Loving the literature. Anything that's got Star Wars written and printed on it is all good for me.
I'm Matt Booker, social media manager for Fanther Tracks. I own a comic shop and have done for 25 years. I just stick to comics and literature-wise. I don't really do much else, but comics is enough for me. And I've got a penchant for Boba Fett stuff and other weird things.
And I'm the new guy, Mark Mulcaster, and I basically just collect anything which says Star Wars on it, as long as it's fairly adult and doesn't take too long to read.
So the world's changed somewhat since we all last sat down and recorded an episode. Very different place. So what have we been up to? We've all been locked in, I suppose.
Lockdown's been really weird in the sense that normally we're all getting together and catching up and doing events and you know, stuff like that. Just being locked in and having all the time in the world, you'd think it would be the best thing in the world, but it's actually more tiring than you realise. But yeah, just ploughing through episodes of Clone Wars, which has been fantastic, and enjoying The Mandalorian and episode 9, which of course we'll probably talk about later. And yeah, just trying to stay on top of everything. There seems to be more Star Wars than ever now, though.
I've been working every day, trying to keep a routine to stop myself sitting at home and eating myself stupid. Clearing the shop out of old stock, eBaying stuff, just trying to pay the bills and stuff. There's no new comics coming out, so I can't get any new product, so I'm just clearing out what I've got and hopefully start afresh when we come out of this.
I've kind of done half and half. I'm still working a little bit. It's actually given me a nice chance to catch up on all the comics, as well as just tidy up the collection room and make sure everything's all kind of like straight and in order. So it's been good. Been talking to Mark quite a bit on the Making Tracks podcast, and just generally trying to soak up as much Star Wars as possible.
I've remained at work every day. I'm doing stuff for work for some food producers and retailers, so they've been enjoying the fact that all the rest of you are sort of hoarding up on food. It's been a little bit like Christmas without the 6 month preparation.
Or the turkeys.
Can't get turkey. There is a UK shortage of chicken at the moment. That's the latest shortage. That and caster sugar, weirdly.
Yes. Yeah. Wow. Yeah. We've had that. I kind of likened the beginning of March to like that very first kind of Force Friday for the Force Awakens, when you'd kind of everybody's really excited about getting into the store, and you walk in there and there's nothing hanging on the shelves.
On that note, I think we should get stuck in and chew over the latest fodder. So what's happening in the world of Star Wars literature? We've seen the release of Star Wars that Ultimate Pop-Up Galaxy, a limited edition through Sideshow Collectibles and Insight Editions, coming in at an eye-watering $250. Only 500 units of them have been produced. It's a lovely hard case slipcover, and it came out on the 28th of April. People in the UK can actually pick it up on Amazon. Have you guys seen that new edition? Has anyone jumped in and ordered one? And I know
thought about it. Definitely thought about it. It's gorgeous. I mean, the actual book itself was phenomenal. We spoke to Matthew Reinhardt at New York Comic Con last year about it. So just to have the book is worth it. But this edition is absolutely stunning. I know by the time this episode comes out, this offer will have passed. But we did have an offer on the site to save 25%, I think off the top of my head, on Insight Edition releases through the May the 4th Star Wars holiday. But yeah, this looks phenomenal. If I had the moolah, given the current circumstances, I can't justify it, but I would be all over this one.
It launched last year at New York, didn't it?
Yeah.
I saw it, thought it was lovely. No. Can't warrant that much money. I understand why it's so much, because they're not cheap to produce those things. They've got to be handmade.
Yeah, no, similar. I saw it, but actually at the time I had to toss up between that or getting the 4K, the 4K Skywalker Saga Blu-ray box set, so I went with that. But maybe if it's still around, if there's still units around in a month or two, well, maybe I'll pull the trigger then.
Also, this past month, with lockdown being in full effect around the world, there's been some attempts to put content out there in a slightly different way to keep everyone entertained. We've seen quite a few different Star Wars alumni read books. Disney Lucasfilm Press have been pushing that quite heavily. They've had Ashley Eckstein read Star Wars The Galaxy Needs You. Eunice read Chewie and the Porgs. And Daisy Ridley on her birthday released BB-8 on the Run. And also friend of the site, Jake, he covered the book that he illustrated, Star Wars How to Speak Wookiee. And lastly, the most recent release, I think, was Auntie Daniels reading Star Wars Galactic Adventures Storybook Collection. So whilst locked up, have any of you guys had a chance to listen in to these productions?
Yeah, I like to call these Crimson Jackanory. That's what I like to call them. I think it's a great idea because everyone's recording from home, you know, and we're all doing it sort of gangster style now with our mobile phones and setups and such. To see these guys do it as well, and I've got to say, StarWars.com have been quite hands on and quite involved in getting people involved in doing stuff like this. It's good. Obviously it's great for sales because everyone's bored and diving on Amazon to order the books, but you know, ulterior motives and all that stuff. But no, I think it's been really, really fun. I just don't know who I'd like to read the next, but I'd love to hear Harrison Ford read something, you know, like Ewok goes, you know, Wicket goes hang gliding or something. I think that'd be fun, you know, given what a fantastic pilot Harrison Ford clearly is, hang gliding book would seem relevant.
That might crash and burn, Ray. So, yeah.
I watched the Eunice one. It was good fun. You know, he had a good bit of fun with it. I don't know how many takes they all did, but they work nicely. It's a good bit of content that's a bit sort of grounded and a bit more realistic.
Nice to see. Yeah, exactly. Same with kind of a Daisy Ridley one. I think it would be cool to get John Boyega to do one. I think he would probably put on a good performance. I say performance, it's not really a performance. It never really feels like anybody's performing. It feels quite down to earth, like Matt said. It's very grounded. So it's a great little showcase, really.
My kind of idea is Ray Park to do one, because you never get to hear his voice ever, obviously. So, like, give him the chance, give him one of the Maul comics or something for him to cover. And when you talk about performance, he might be one of the guys could actually turn it into some kind of performance art.
Yeah, that would be quite interesting. Ray Park in his gym doing some kind of cartwheels and some
Ray
stuff
Park
like
in his kitchen with a broom handle. That's what you need. Yeah. Ultimate Star Wars kid.
Totally.
Yeah. I'd like to see a Dave Filoni one.
Yeah. Do a Rebels one. Do every voice like Chopper.
No, D. Bradley Baker reading a Clones one.
Oh, yeah. That's a good shout. Good shout.
Coming up on the 23rd of June, book two of the Alphabet Squadron trilogy releases. This one's entitled Shadowfall. The first excerpt from that book has been released, and we've also had a chance to see Major Soren Kiez, who's going to be the sort of main villain of the Imperial Remnant. Have any of you guys had a chance to check out what they've shown us from Shadowfall so far? And what are you hoping from the sequel to the first book?
Only the images they put out on StarWars.com, and I did notice that the name Soren Kiez just reminded me of Kaiser Soze. I just think they've done a play on words. I don't know if that gives anything away about the character. I've not, for my shame, I've not yet read Alphabet Squadron, so it is on the huge pile of books that I need to get through, or at least get a good skim through, so I've got an idea of the storyline. But this has intrigued me. Just the look of it looks kind of cool, because they're flipping the coin and giving you the angle, the alternate angle, like they did when Alphabet Squadron came out, and you got the TIE Fighter Marvel miniseries, gave you the other side of the coin, so to speak. So I'm determined to get Alphabet Squadron read, because I'll be all in for this one. I think this one looks really interesting.
I don't tend to read any kind of preview excerpts before they come out, just because I just like to read a book fresh. I really enjoyed Alphabet Squadron. It was quite a while ago that it came out, so I might have to reread it before I read Shadowfall. But it was quite interesting. It was definitely a book of kind of two halves. The first half of the book just felt a bit slower, but then once the squadron gets together, the pace kind of picks up, and you've got like some really nice, fun, distinctive characters in the squadron. Obviously, each one has their own different starfighter, so that kind of keeps it easy to differentiate. So I mean, like Mark said, it's quite cool that they're, you know, if he's going from that perspective of like seeing maybe similar events but from the other side, that would just that could make this a really unique story.
I'll probably just wait and do the audiobook. I enjoyed the TIE Fighter comic though, that was good. Bit disjointed, didn't have a really good timeline to it, but it was all right.
Yeah, I mean, the audiobook was good. That tends to be where I consume most of my novels. If they've released an audiobook, I'm more likely to have listened to the audiobook than actually sat down and read the book.
Yeah, I'm determined to do that. I know Carl over at Desert Planet Discs, he listens to a lot of the audiobooks as well. And I'm determined, because it's such a time chewer to sit down and physically read the book, but I am on the road a lot, so I should make better use of that time, which is what I'm planning on doing going forward. So Brian's a fellow wrestling fan, so I tend to listen to a lot of wrestling podcasts, which is great fun. But really, given what we do with Panther, I should probably put that time to better use and start listening to the audiobooks, because it's difficult to fit everything in and sit down and get to read. So I think I'll be joining you on that one. I'll hunt this one down and give this one a good listen, I think.
In fairness, I think Audible now do this really nice offer where you can share an audiobook. So if you want it, I can share it with you.
That's very kind.
That's part of, I think, their membership kind of offer. So it's quite cool.
Moving on to The High Republic, which was announced and launched at the start of the year. We've seen some updates on that. Michael Seguin, who's the Lucasfilm Publishing creative director, gave some insights to StarWars.com about how he views it as being a very hopeful and optimistic time for the Jedi good and noble. They've shared some artwork as well of some of the characters. Have you had a chance to check out what's been released so far? Did any of the characters stand out at you?
We talked a little bit, me and Mark, about this on Making Tracks a few episodes ago. Really, I think we're both really looking forward to this one. I mean, it's a cool era, and it's one where you go through, and I know canon is a dirty word right now, unless it's in the title Canon Fodder, of course. It's difficult to sort of pin what the state of the Republic was at that time, but certainly when you look back through the old chronologies, there was very, very little happening. About the only thing you could sort of say with any confidence was that Yoda was around, and that's about it. But I think if they're sort of pitching it, they're giving it this noble knight's feel. I hope they don't go down the Knights of the Round Table, you know, sort of aesthetic too much, because that's kind of a bit disingenuous. I know in Star Wars it's very popular to go, this is the Western one, this is the Samurai one, this is the Romance one or whatever, but you can be too on the nose if you take that sort of thought process too far. But I think there's some really good scope for this in literature, in comics, in every angle. Now that they're doing like they did, you know, the Dooku audiobook, I know we'll talk about it later, the Aphra audiobook, I'm hoping that they go down the line with this in a similar way, really expand it, make it like Shadows was, everything but the film, and maybe even the film at some point, who knows.
Part of what's been sort of not announced, but what's been discovered in this past month has been there's been a lot of trademarks made under the High Republic brand, from pretty much covering anything you would if you were creating a multimedia product. So you're looking at apparatus for recording, transmission, processing and reproduction of sound, images, data, digital media, audio books, audio and visual recordings, video game software, and the list goes on and on and on.
Yeah.
So you kind of get the impression that they're putting a lot of weight behind this. You know, they've been building it up for a long time under the sort of heading of Project Luminous. All the publishers are really getting behind it, and they're all involved at some level or other. So it feels like it's something that they're probably going to launch it as a literature thing and potentially expand it from there on.
Yeah,
that makes sense. I think seeing how the take-up goes with literature, then it's there's kind of like, you know, they're not putting all their chips in one number, as it were. You know, so, and I mean, it's quite interesting when you look at the characters, they and they're kind of detailed on stars.com, and also the type of books, you can kind of start to link up which characters possibly could feature in what types of books, you know, which ones will possibly be in the young adult reader and which ones are going to be in the comics and stuff. So it's possibly a nice platform for all ages rather than just going straight in with the adult novels.
Yeah. The what I kind of like about it is this whole concept of that they're not basing it on like this idea of an unwavering dogma that they all have this same passion for protecting the light and life, and that every character is going to be at a slightly different stage in their journey. So they're all going to have, some are going to have a lot of experience on their side, some of them are not. So it kind of feels like there's going to be a little bit of something for everybody.
We picked up on that. We did pick up on that in the sense that you got the, I'm not familiar with the names yet, so forgive me, but the lady, the blonde-haired lady, who seemed to be the top of the tree in terms of being a Jedi Knight.
Avacris. And then right down to
Avacris, that was it, thank you. And then you got down to the kid who very much felt like, kind of like an Ahsoka kind of character, a bit sparky and a bit more, you know, a bit more energy. So you felt like there was a character for everyone through there.
Yeah.
And Brian, what do you think about, you know, the era that they're setting it in? Do you think that 200 years before, you know, A New Hope and that is too close? Would you have preferred to have seen it be set a little bit further back, do you think? Or is that time?
I'm glad it's in an untouched era. You know, they've given it to a creative team who basically have got an empty book to tackle it with. I do have this issue that perhaps it's too close and that you can't veer too far away because you know where you have to be in 200 years time in terms of technology and so on. I like the idea that it's just at the point of time where they're discovering hyperspace. So I always try and equate when you're trying to build up a literature series, it's like a TV series where you've got the planet of the week kind of concept. That you're giving yourself enough options to change directions. So if something's not working out, I can change it up. I can visit a new planet. I can introduce new characters. You know, you've got this open book. And I think it's important when they're looking at introducing an ongoing comic that as part of this, or I think potentially two ongoing comics, one for IDW, one for Marvel, that you give yourself that kind of creative freedom.
Yeah.
I mean, I was wondering actually, and I don't think me and Mark mentioned this, but obviously you had Benioff and Wise, who were meant to be doing stuff for Lucasfilm and Star Wars. I just wonder if there's a certain amount of their influence possibly in the discussions to kind of get them into this era, because what we heard was they were very much keen to do something a bit Game of Thronesy, but set in Star Wars, and this possibly has that kind of almost has that kind of like look about it, I think.
Yeah,
I think definitely feels like that. Is it too harsh to maybe say that it feels like it's like a repurposed idea?
That's not harsh at all. No. I think there's lots of repurposed ideas floating around Star Wars.
That's pretty much Star Wars, isn't it?
Yeah.
I think.
Yeah. It kind of feels like maybe this idea has been kicking around various different stages and trying to find where's right for it. And I think potentially this is how it's come around, and that this idea kind of works on very many different levels if we handle it right, if we produce it right and we give ourselves the opportunities, because feasibly you can have an animated series going at the same time as in the books and comics in the same era that touches on the same main themes but have their own cast of characters. If that makes sense.
It makes perfect sense, especially it's more pertinent that thought process than ever, because watching, I know we don't go into that in this show, but watching the latest episode of The Clone Wars is happening at the same time as Revenge of the Sith. So you could certainly have a book or a comic or an animated series or a live action series or a web series or a film all having moments that overlap and running concurrently. You know, if they schedule it right and they work it all out right, you know, Clone Wars have got lucky because they've got Filoni, who's so clever at plotting and making this all work, but they could do it. So that's a good point, yeah.
I think the other line that I picked up on came from Calvin Scott, who's been a friend of the show before and joined us at Celebration last year on stage. He made the comment that some of the characters are going to choose not to work with the Jedi. So they've become force-trained, but they don't view the Jedi as being the path for them. So that kind of idea is that you're taking... It kind of feels like the sort of Qui-Gon, sort of Count Dooku kind of...
It's the Lost 12, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That kind of idea, flipping it a little and doing it in a slightly different way. I think there's... I really like the people that they've put in the creative for this. I think they're pretty talented.
And they've mixed them around as well, haven't they? Charles Soule's writing the book and Cabin's doing the Marvel comic.
If you wrote down the list of talent and didn't tell you what they were going to be doing, but there was going to be comics, books, young adult stuff, you wouldn't have put the people in the projects that they've got.
Yeah.
Which, again, I think is interesting.
Yeah, I think that's good, because I think it's going to have, it's going to lend a slightly different voice to that medium. Because, you know, we've all read for books and the comics, but when you swap them around, it gives a creative also a slightly different avenue to explore, which maybe they won't necessarily have when you're writing a comic. Obviously it's a very kind of short kind of short form way of writing. So obviously given somebody like Charles Soule a novel, is going to give him a chance to kind of expand his kind of prose and his dialogue and just kind of see where he can take stuff. Because I think he writes probably the most interesting Star Wars comics at the moment.
Moving on to something completely different is the Shakespeare-style adaptations of Star Wars. We've got The Merry Rise of Skywalker, where we've again had the first excerpt from it, and we've also seen the cover for it. Have any of you guys checked out any of the sort of Shakespearean Star Wars books before?
Yeah, I've reviewed a few of them for our old home and on our old podcast. I love his style. I interviewed him a while ago, and he's a nice guy as well, Ian Desher. So he's definitely the right guy for this, and I hope he takes this sort of style into other Hilda franchises, because this, I'm so curious to see how he wraps it up. I'll just say I've not read The Force Awakens or The Last Jedi Shakespeare books that he's done yet. They're still to be picked up by me and read through, but they're great reads. And we all read Shakespeare as kids at school. Ooh, you know,
so I didn't.
Really?
Yeah, wow. Didn't. No, wasn't on the curriculum. Yeah. I did Gaelic.
Or Robbie Burns for you, was it?
I did Gaelic. I didn't even do Robbie Burns. No, didn't do that. Yeah.
Yeah. So I've got all of his previous Shakespeare styles books, and they translate really well to to an audiobook, because they always do them as a casted audio book. So, and I think obviously just the way that Shakespeare is constructed and the fact there's a lot of monologues on that, I think it works really well. And so I'm quite curious to see who gets the monologues, because I think it'd be quite fun to have a Hux monologue, especially based around his scheme and stuff like that. But I don't think, at least it's not on Audible, but I don't think they did an audiobook version for The Last Jedi, which is a bit of a shame. I guess that's for obvious reasons. I don't know. Hopefully they will for this one. I suppose it comes down to how the sales work and if there's demand for it, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, it's got a Ben. It feels like, I mean, the cover's Ben, isn't it? Ben and Kylo sort of thing.
Yeah.
So it's got that focus. And you think scenes that you could see being done, you know, the Han and Kylo, or Han and Ben at that point, little monologue. And like you say, Hux is, you know, sort of seeing what he's thinking. And previous books, you know, there's actually, they kind of feel like, they are fun, but they kind of feel not frivolous, that's not fair, but not a main focal Star Wars release. It's almost like an oddity in a cute way.
Novelty.
But there have, novelty, that's the word. But there have been ones in the past where there's been passages and you've read it and thought, actually, that's really quite perceptive. And it's in that Shakespeare, you know, pentameter, is it? Is that the right word?
Yeah, that's pentameter. Yeah.
You know, so it's got that rhythm. So, I think they're great. I haven't read them for a while, but I do. I might just pick the three because they've done them as box sets before, haven't they, each of the trilogies?
Yeah, I mean, I think the prequel trilogy, just because it's a tragedy, is so kind of like appropriate for Shakespeare anyway.
Yeah.
But I think it'd be quite cool with The Rise of Skywalker to have the conversation that Leia and Luke have, which is kind of mentioned in the expanded edition for the novel. That would be, again, quite an interesting kind of conversation to have in Shakespearean.
I just hope the line "Alas, poor 3PO, I knew him well" is in there.
That would definitely be a good scene, the 3PO scene. That would be a great scene.
It's got to be used, surely, when the switch C-3PO off.
I'm Anthony Daniels, and you are listening to Fantha Tracks. Well done.
Talking of C-3PO and talking of audiobook, available now through Official Picks is a signed 9-disc audiobook of I Am C-3PO, which is Anthony Daniels' memoirs, limited to 1,500 copies. Mark, you've just had the pleasure of speaking with Anthony.
Yeah, and he likes to let us know he's got a book out, I'll say that. And he does mention that he's got an audiobook, this audiobook out at the end of the conversation we had. He's proud of the book and it's done well, I think, and there's a paperback version on the way, lockdown pending. But to hear him, well, I know Mark has actually, you've heard the 9-disc audiobook, haven't you?
Yeah, I've listened to the audiobook and it's great because Anthony reads it. So what better way to, you know, hear the voice of Anthony than through Anthony. I think also it's always going to be a really interesting read to have somebody who's been in Star Wars from day one all the way through different iterations, and there's some nice stories and some funny stories and that, and it's definitely one to kind of consider picking up, I think.
Does he ever do the 3PO voice in the book, then, in the audiobook?
He drops into it, doesn't he?
He does, yeah. When there's either a bit of dialogue that he's kind of recited or, you know, he's changed about, he does drop into a bit of 3PO now and again, yeah.
Is it treading a lot of stuff we already know, or is there a lot of, there's a good chunk of new bits in it?
Jump into the disappointments first. I think the thing that's a little bit of a pity is the fact it came out before The Rise of Skywalker.
Yeah.
Whereas what would have been nice would have actually have been to hold off until after that had been released, and because he doesn't really speak too much about it. I mean, he talks about it's like his last day and what he can, but obviously there's not much specifics that he can go into, because I'd love to know exactly his, you know, what he was thinking and feeling about potentially 3PO's death or, you know, stuff like that.
You were in on the call we did, Mark, so you heard what me and Anthony said, and he basically thinks he's done with the role, certainly live action. He would do it again, I think. One of the questions was, you know, how else could you do it? Would you be happy to voice it if somebody else was in the suit and so on and so forth? So he's certainly open to it. Just to say, that conversation that I did with Anthony recently, we will hear it later on in the month on Making Tracks. So that will be coming to Making Tracks. So we'll be able to listen to that in full. But this book, it was great fun. I mean, I've been very fortunate. I interviewed him for The Insider. So he had a good chat before the book came out. And like you say, he kind of wished that he'd been out to say more about Rise of Skywalker. And he said as much, I think, as he probably could. But he clearly loved doing the film. It was his favourite Star Wars film since, for him, as a personal project. It was his favourite since the original, I think.
Yeah, and I think the original was quite a physical kind of challenge for him. I think even though he's a lot older now, I think just, you know, getting the suit, you know, and going out to Tunisia to wear it, it wasn't exactly the easiest of kind of jobs for him. But, I mean, I think any time that you can hear stories about the original trilogy from the cast, it's worth reading. And I think he went into more detail than I think I've ever heard him speak about his time on set in Tunisia.
Yeah, so tune into forthcoming episodes of Making Tracks wherever we'll be able to play that one for you.
Plug, 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 plug.
Also revealed this past month was the cover for the upcoming anthology, The Clone Wars Stories of Light and Dark. That's going to be a collection of 11 stories by 11 different authors, due to launch at Star Wars Celebration. So
We'll wait and see on that one.
Space. You guys are all sort of Clone Wars fans. Are you looking forward to this anthology? What did you think of the cover they revealed?
The cover was striking but unremarkable. I hope that doesn't sound too harsh. It was nicely painted, but it didn't do much for me. I'm looking forward to reading this one, getting the chance to dive into a short story book and sort of soak up a short story. I've probably got the time to do that quite comfortably as opposed to a full novel at the moment. But yeah, it'd be interesting to see where in the clump, because now we're at the end of the series and we're right into Revenge of the Sith. You kind of forget that when it all kicked off, Attack of the Clones had only just taken place. I'm talking chronologically. Of course, Sith had come out before the Clone Wars TV show started. But, you know, in the timeline, you still felt... I always think of this when you watch Empire. There's a moment in Empire for me. It's when just as Fett is following the Falcon to Cloud City. Right up to that moment for me, it still feels like Star Wars. And then you get to that moment, it's almost like a turn in the film. It feels more like Return of the Jedi. It's just weird. It's just the way I perceive these things. There's moments in the Clone Wars where you're thinking, well, we're nearer to Attack of the Clones than we are to Revenge of the Sith. And I'm just curious to see where within that 3-year span these short stories take place.
They're going to be 10 retellings of memorable episodes stroke arcs.
Yeah.
Okay.
And there's going to be one original story based around the Night Sisters.
So cool. I wonder if it's going to be possibly like a certain point of view. Maybe that anthology a little bit.
A bit like that, yeah.
Yeah, so maybe getting, you know, a different like, for instance, I can quite foresee a battle droid's perspective on, I don't know, let's say the first episode, Ambush or something, which I think Brian's almost watched.
Yeah.
but, you know, so I'm in two minds because I think it's possibly slightly a missed opportunity to not have new stories or more new stories, but at the same time, I think it might be quite fun to see what they do and how they kind of retell these stories.
The story I'll jump into first in there is the Anne Covery one, because that's Dave Filoni's wife, so she's got the most help in doing anything.
Yeah, I don't think many people have picked up on that, have they, that she's married to Filoni?
Well, she wrote one of those books under the Her Universe publishing thing a couple of years back, didn't she? We went to that panel at New York, I think, wasn't it, Mark?
Yep. Yeah, it was. When they launched
that? Yep. I don't know if they did any more books after the first wave, though.
I don't think they did, because they were taking pitches from the general public to do books, and I don't remember anything ever coming out, yeah.
Also out this past month was the latest issue of LEGO Star Wars magazine. And anyone pick that up from their local newsagents in their one venture out a day?
Nope. My missus has picked them up when she's been shopping, so I've got pictures on Fanta from them. And actually, the latest one, one of the readers sent in a picture for us. So if you ever spot anything out and about, send us it in if we haven't covered it. But yeah, I haven't picked up at all those two. She's got both the previous issues because my news in town doesn't stock it.
And the last piece of news that came out this past month was the exciting news that there's going to be a new audio drama, a full cast audio drama, coming out on the 21st of July. Based on the character of Dr. Aphra. Are you guys looking forward to this audio book? Obviously, after we had the Dooku one last year, if you could have the free pick of who to play Aphra, Vader, or any of the other characters, who would you pick?
I like the fact that they're doing these audiobooks. I think it's cool that they're doing it. Who would voice it? I don't know. I mean, Vader, you think there's Lucasfilm voice people who could do Vader. You think that's a potential. 000... I don't know how I hear 000 in my head.
I reckon, why not throw it to Anthony Daniels? Because I think that'd be quite fun. A bit like, you know, when he gets kind of, kind of like reprogrammed.
The red eyes.
In Rise of Skywalker. It'd be quite fun to kind of have a maniacal, crazy 3PO as 000, which basically is what he is, really, in essence.
That's a great shout, because, I mean, you think about 3PO, you had the weird sort of half-American-sounding 3PO in Attack of the Clones when he's in the Geonosis arena. Then you have the monotone 3PO in Rise of Skywalker, and then, obviously, 3PO as we know him. That's a great shout. That's a brilliant shout. BT's obviously got to be Dave Filoni, because any cute, funny droid has got to be voiced by Dave Filoni. But Aphra, I don't know. The right attitude within the voice.
I mean, I don't even think I could possibly suggest somebody to play her in a live action. I've never given it some thought, really. But I think it'll be, I'm really looking forward to it because the Dooku was really, really good story. And I just love Aphra. I never take Reed and Aphra too seriously. No. I mean, it's just always a good kind of fun adventure. I suppose it depends whether or not they kind of go down the staples of, you know, regular audiobook performers or if they're going for somebody new and different. I don't know.
Would you see James Earl Jones come back for Vader?
Be amazing if he could. Yeah, it really would be, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose, again, it depends on how they kind of portray Vader, because obviously he can be the foil to Aphra. I mean, he is a lot of the times. So, yeah, I suppose that would be cool. That would be kind of the ultimate, I think.
Heading on into the reviews for what we've been reading this past month. The Star Wars Ongoing relaunched at the beginning of the year. Have you guys been picking up that series? And what are your thoughts so far?
I've read issue one so far. I've not had a chance to get my hands on any of the others as yet. I enjoyed it. It didn't blow me away. It was nicely drawn. The story was okay. It didn't grab me. I enjoyed the end of the previous run because Phil Noto drawing anything makes it worth reading, if that makes sense. This was all right. It didn't grab me. I'm hoping that issue two picks it up and does a bit more. It just seemed a little bit like they're trying to shoehorn too many little elements in and just a bit too. And the whole thing with the hands going down the shaft at the end, and it just didn't grab me.
It felt a little bit forced, I think, at times.
Was that a pun?
Yeah. It felt like they had a couple of nice ideas and tried to build a story around that rather than the story discover the nice idea, if that makes sense.
Yeah,
it does, because, I mean, it's like, is it issue three? It's basically the pitch is what happens if Princess Leia gets frozen in carbonite.
Yeah.
And so it's, I mean, I enjoyed reading it as the full arc. I tend to try and save them all up until, like, I can read a full arc and then move on. So it kind of, it flowed a little bit easier for me. And it was fun. It was fun to return to Cloud City, and obviously for the reasons that, you know, rescuing that, Lando rescuing, what's his face? Lobot. Forgotten his, yeah.
Yeah.
But also it's like you guys said, it's kind of like they've had some nice ideas and we're just trying to kind of squeeze them all together for no real reason. They probably could have, you know, spread them out a bit.
I didn't like the fact they tried to shoehorn a lot of other era aliens and stuff into them. So you've got like issue two, there's a Yarrel Poof alien in there and other things, and a guy who looks very Finn-esque. Bits like that in there, which I was like, why do we need that? You didn't try and put any of the aliens into the sequel trilogy at all. So, a bit weird. The art in issue one was beautiful, and issue two and three was a lot less time was taken over it, I think.
Yeah, that's what I felt as well.
Yeah. Great artist, but I think issue one, he had a lot of time to put that one down. So Luke sat on the Falcon, and the bit straight after the end of Empire was just beautiful. And his space battle was really nice, but issue two and three was a lot less time spent on doing the art. And I'd rather that issue one was the same in consistency.
Yeah, I think that's a fair criticism. Also launching at the start of the year came the Darth Vader, got its relaunch to the ongoing. So we're back to issue one with that. I kind of liked it on the basis of it was a little bit darker than we've had in the Vader comic series so far. It started off, you know, in issue one, quite dark and sinister with Vader attacking Luke. So I kind of appreciated that. I don't know what the rest of you guys thought.
Not a chance yet. We saw Greg Pak at New York Comic Con talking about it, and it seemed fascinating. So I'm very much looking forward to getting up to speed on that one and reading it, but as yet not had the chance. But that is probably the one I'm looking forward to the most to getting my teeth into.
I've really enjoyed it. I think the framing of the red vision of his lenses and the flashbacks is just a really nice way of doing it. We've never really seen that done to this depth before.
Yeah.
Seeing characters in there from the prequels was quite nice. It worked quite well. There's a lot of expendables in this one, shall we say, like his droid. Yeah. He ain't going to last very long. He knows far too much. And issue two's bringing in the Handmaiden, I just thought was a beautifully wonderful idea.
Yeah, it's a great touch, isn't it?
Yeah.
I think the story kind of concept of, like, Vader trying to kind of trace who may have, like, helped or hit Luke is a really nice way of being able to go back and kind of revisit some of these kind of locations, but from Vader's perspective. So,
yep.
You know, Padme's kind of apartment, which he visits, and, you know, we find out that no one's been in there since her death because it's been locked just to kind of preserve her memory, which is quite a nice touch.
Yeah.
And seeing Sabe,
yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Really
don't
nice know. Touch.
Yeah. Yeah.
But a really good little well thought through plot point. Mm. Really liked it.
And it ties really nicely into E.K. Johnson's Queen Shadow, I think.
Oh, does it?
At least from a character perspective, yeah.
Right.
I think the premise that they've got is a lot stronger premise than they have for the Star Wars ongoing. It feels like they've got a definitive direction and they know what way they want to go. The Star Wars ongoing, to me, felt a little bit like we need to have a Star Wars ongoing. It's just a comic of the month where the Vader
I just wish it was called Empire Strikes Back.
Why not Star Wars? Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, to be fair, Brian, I kind of tend to find that with the Star Wars title. It just feels like it's always been a little bit like something to fill.
Yeah.
A little bit. Whereas with the Vader comics specifically, they've always had really nice story arcs, and there's always feels like it's a decent direction, and they're pushing Vader in, like, through his character development. Whereas Star Wars always just feels a little bit kind of like, yeah, we've got to do something with these characters. So wouldn't it be cool if we send them here and Luke did this and Han and Leia did that? So
yeah, I think the thing you've got with Vader is it's one lone character, so every other character is expendable, and you know they can't survive or whatever. Whereas the Star Wars one, you've got the core cast of the gang, and they've all got to survive and get through it because you know where they come out. Whereas yeah. Vader's supporting cast, you can just wipe them all out whenever he wants.
Exactly.
And there's more to do. There's more. It's a bit more open.
It's a bit more open, but also it's, I think, the character himself is kind of a bit of a blank canvas because, because of who he is, you know, he's got such a kind of tortured kind of past that they do quite heavily rely on using flashbacks with Vader, or kind of like, you know, kind of memory ghosts and stuff like that. And I think it's a really nice way of kind of putting the pressure on him and kind of giving him some kind of development that you don't really feel from the films themselves.
Well, no, the films, he just turns up, does some baddie stuff and goes away again.
Exactly, yeah.
And strangely, with the launch of these two ongoings, you kind of feel it should have stolen the sort of comic book scene for Star Wars at the start of this year. But to me, there was another series, which was a short series, The Rise of Kylo Ren, that's really taken that mantle on. It's and the kind of oddity that it's effectively a prequel to the sequel trilogy. But it's really there designed to add an element of weight to the whole story of Ben, his downfall, and why he comes back from the dark side. If anyone complains about spoilers, it's now May. Film came out in December. that's really been the comic book series that has attracted my attention this year. It's been The Rise of Kylo Ren from Charles Soule. How do you guys feel about it? And do you think it served its purpose of adding to Ben's story?
It seemed to. I mean, seeing Ben and Luke together in his early development, and Lor San Tekka with him as well, which sort of adds weight to that opening scene of Force Awakens. That was all very good. And seeking out these lost temples as a plot point that kind of ties into Rise of Skywalker, with what Lando said about how him and Luke were sort of hunting the galaxy for things. So there's all these nice little links. And also, you know where it's going with Kylo. And a comic is never going to delve into that to the depth that a novel would. So I kind of feel like there's a novel waiting as well to sort of put even more meat on the bone, but the artwork was attractive, and I've just read the first two issues, so I'm only halfway through this at the moment, but what I've read so far, I did enjoy. And just to say, Paul Naylor's reviewing it, so the reviews are going on Fanta probably, I think, this week, I think, as we speak. So, but yeah, I've enjoyed it. I think it was a worthwhile project, and it certainly got people stoked when it got announced, when Saul announced it. I think, again, that was at New York Comic Con. People seem to be really buzzing for that one, so... yeah, I've enjoyed what I've read so far. I'm looking forward to finishing it off.
I think the buzz when it came out was insane. Having a comic shop, people were coming in going, have you got this? I was like, no, but I can get you a second print. And it's had umpteen printings. The fan demand's been superb. And I think once it dropped and people actually started reading it and telling other people, the fan buzz has been fantastic. And as a reader myself, I think it's possibly my favourite prequel era comic. And a great writer who knows how to write Star Wars, Will Sliney, who knows how to draw Star Wars, did an amazing job on the Galaxy's Edge comics, who I spoke to last year. He was at London Film and Comic Con last year, and I had a chat with him there. And this comic has got so much plot, story. You know where Kylo ends, but we don't know where Kylo came from. And this tells you so much more and ties in stuff. And it needed to be told now before any other... It couldn't have been told previously. You know, we now know where Kylo ends up and becomes Ben again, all the rest of it. So it works beautifully. I want the trade paperback now. I want to sell everybody the trade paperback and go, look, read this. This tells you so much more. I think some of the story elements in there should have been in the films.
Yeah, totally agree. That's exactly what I was going to say.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's one of those things, isn't it, that I think... We were all begging for backstory for some of these characters when the sequel trilogy was being produced. I think it really adds weight because, I mean, even after The Last Jedi, the whole kind of like, why did he kind of like destroy the Jedi Temple and that was just, it just wasn't very well covered. And if you're going to do it and really cover it, you should have probably covered it in The Last Jedi. But to kind of really get that extra understanding behind the manipulation of Snoke and therefore Palpatine with Kylo, I think it creates this really interesting character, because all the way through this, the four issues, he's kind of like, he wants to be bad, but he kind of also doesn't really want to fulfill it either. He kind of like, he's holding back. And when you start to know that, then you start to kind of really appreciate the character and the face turn that he does in Rise of Skywalker, I think, that little bit more.
So, obviously, the DVD's dropped. It's out on streaming services on Monday, so on Disney Plus from Monday. That'll be May the 4th, which is tomorrow as we record this. So I guess it's probably worthwhile just touching on how everyone sort of felt about the film. Just out of sheer interest, because obviously the character of Ben and Rey are the central two characters of the film, and we're talking here about Ben.
How long have you got?
Well, yeah, it's thing is, Star Wars Emperor and Jedi, the original trilogy, are the meat and bones of everything Star Wars. And the sequel trilogy, the prequel trilogy rather, was useful in sort of building up how everybody got to the places they got to. But when you get to the end of Return of the Jedi, after that six movie cycle, you know, is there anything here that's adding to that? I don't know. I enjoyed them. I'm glad we had them. But for the most part, they didn't quite hit the mark. But all in all, it just felt like they should have, this trilogy more than any, they should have had it plotted and nailed down, and they should have known the directions they were going in. And it just feels, they got away with it on the original trilogy because it is what it is. And the prequels were obviously more planned than any other trilogy. This time round, you think they'd have learned from that. So it just kind of feels like they're winging it. And sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. So whilst I enjoyed it, they're fun films and I'm glad they're here and I'm glad we got them, but they're not essential.
That's my biggest thing, is I wish they'd at least had a loose plot of 7, 8, 9. You can bash on the prequels all you want, but George knew where he was going with those three. And he probably made bits along the way, you know, and edit his ideas and stuff, but he had a beginning, middle and end. And even in the, you know, A New Hope era, you read about how George was working on those and he had a much bigger story and had to cut it down to just A New Hope.
Yeah.
And the sequel trilogy just missed that completely. They didn't have an idea where they were going, I don't think. And if they did, it really doesn't show through.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think they bought Star Wars and rushed into it too quickly.
I think that is basically part of the issue. They brought it for, what, $4+ billion. And, you know, from that business kind of shareholder perspective, they needed to start earning that back pronto. There's absolutely nothing wrong, I think, personally, with any of the three films, really. I mean, I saw each of them multiple times, and we don't need to get into how many times, because it's quite embarrassing. But the fact of the matter is, I think The Force Awakens played very heavily on the nostalgia of the original trilogy. That was its brief was basically...
Get
the disenfranchised fans who fell off the Star Wars wagon because of the prequels back on, and then introduce it to new fans. And I think Force Awakens did that really well. I'm just going to repeat basically what you two have said. I think where the biggest failing of this whole production is that they just didn't really have some plot points. And it didn't even need to be a massive, like, you know, tomb of like work to kind of hand over from JJ to Rian Johnson to the next director. It just needed to be like, right, this is Rey, and this is where she's going to end up, and she in the middle story needs to be told this or find out this. And I think if they had that kind of plotted from the get-go, you would have had like a story that just felt a little bit more consistent. And I think a lot of people have said about The Rise of Skywalker, it kind of almost feels like it was JJ basically almost doing episode 8 and episode 9 in one film, because it felt really packed full of stuff, but a little bit rushed.
Yeah.
I mean, there was pacing issues with The Force Awakens to begin with. The first half of The Force Awakens is beautifully paced, but the second half, again, just feels really rushed. And it's just a bit of a shame. Obviously, with, you know, the loss of Carrie, that's not helped things, I don't think. But I think what they managed to do with her in The Rise of Skywalker was phenomenal. And and a gift that we actually managed to get Carrie in that film at all. So, I think only time's going to tell, really. You know, something that I mentioned on one of the earlier episodes of Making Tracks was that some people who have watched The Last Jedi only a couple of times, but have gone back to rewatch it recently, have kind of, I don't know if it's come to terms with it or just kind of like seen it from a different perspective, and have kind of enjoyed it a lot more than they did the first time. So maybe, you know, maybe give it 5 years or so, we'll be looking back and kind of accepting the trilogy for what it is, but also I think appreciating what it became as well.
I think it's a mistake to beat yourself up for not liking it in a way, because Star Wars is unique to almost all franchises.
Yeah.
In that we'll still be watching it and still be talking about it in 5, 10, 15 years' time. And after a certain amount of time, like the prequels now are far better regarded now than they were back then. You know, and I think they will age, okay, visual effects age differently, but, you know, generally the film will age well. And I think these will... especially when there's ancillary stuff coming off the back of it. You just talked about Rise of Kylo Ren, which adds meat to the bone, and the Phasma novel added meat to the bone. There's all these other things that will... There's a Poe Dameron book coming out soon that's going to add more detail. So, you know, I think things will... It'll get viewed as a cohesive trilogy as opposed to three very, very disparate films, or certainly two films that are sort of sandwiched with one that maybe people feel doesn't quite fit. So I definitely want to watch Last Jedi again after seeing this. I've not had a chance to revisit, but I definitely want to.
Hello, I'm Ahmed Best, and you're listening to Fantha Tracks.
To me, you could sum up the whole trilogy just with one word, which is respect, right? And The Force Awakens, they showed too much respect to Star Wars. They were too scared to do their own thing. And so it just became like a tribute.
A soft reboot.
Yeah. Then The Last Jedi felt like it wanted to disrespect in a lot of ways. In some ways, it didn't want to be a Star Wars film. Mm-hmm. So if you don't want to make a Star Wars film, don't make a Star Wars film. You know? Mm. Then you came to episode 9 and you felt like it wanted to undo what had happened in 8. But by that point, you've got to commit and just follow through with the story that you've got. And I think it, at no point did they get the respect that they should have shown to each other and to the film right. And I think it kind of centred to me really how they treated the characters from the original trilogy and really the actors. And that I don't think any of them got the respect that they should have. And they didn't get the arc or the story that they should have. I just found it amazing at times, especially in the character of Luke and the way that that character was treated over the course of the trilogy. And
yeah,
I think that a lot of it's borne out as well in terms of effectively what the actors have kind of insinuated, how they felt. And I think in many ways Lucasfilm dropped the ball because they should have been the people in charge. And it just kept feeling like they kept handing all the responsibility onto writer-director for each film. And so you had no cohesion and no direction and no control. And to me, it fell apart at that point.
A lot of yes men. Yeah. A lot of yes men saying, well, yeah, that's great. And it's like, no, that's not great.
I mean, that's
You've got the story group who could yay and nay stuff and like rein it in a bit. I don't think anybody had the control over it, and it's a bit of a shame.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, that's basically the role, really, of the executive producer, especially of a trilogy. Yeah. If you're going to do a series of films, that's kind of what the executive producer's role partly is. I mean, because, you know, directors, as we saw, came and went. Yeah. But obviously, you know...
Well, more people have left making a Star Wars film director-wise than have made one.
Well, yeah, exactly. but at the end of the day, the producer, you know, is there to kind of really steer the ship in that kind of direction. I mean, there's a part of me that kind of thinks that maybe there was a transitional issue going on as well. I think, and we talked about this before we started recording, that the, you know, Lucasfilm was very much an independent filmmaker, and Lucasfilm was an independent film company. And maybe they kind of wanted to try and keep that independent kind of filmmaker company kind of trait going. That's why they kind of didn't have a plan and were like, well, wouldn't it be fun and interesting if each director came in and had their own different take on the characters, and then, you know, and then we're just going to let them run with it and see what happens, which is great if you don't have one of the world's largest fan bases to please. And if you're not spending like what, $350 odd million plus to produce and market the thing. So it's a risky thing to do.
Massively. Yeah.
You know, and I suppose, like I said, you know, give it time, we'll be able to kind of like look back a bit more objectively and kind of see if it really paid off or not.
There was a lot of people, I think, who really enjoyed it. And I think you have to remember that point, and that not all the content has to serve every single fan.
Correct.
And at some point you have to let go a little bit. And we've been very lucky in terms of Star Wars content, especially on film and TV, that there's been so little of it, that if you're a fan, you've probably loved all of it. And you're now at the point where there's so much content getting created that it's impossible to love all of it. And we almost need to teach ourselves that a little bit.
And I suppose, you know, this podcast is hosted by 4 white middle-class males. And really this trilogy has helped kind of like push female characters in Star Wars and ethnic minority characters in Star Wars. And with this whole era of you know, the Disney productions have done that, and it has been a positive, which before, you know, we were basically had very few female character and especially lead characters to kind of like, you know, choose and pick from.
Talking the Rise of Skywalker this past month, we've had the release of the Art of book. I don't know if you guys have had a chance to pick that up. I certainly have. I've delved into it. I actually bought the Korean version of the book back in December when it was supposed to be released. So it's actually fun to actually get some text to provide some context to a lot of the art. What was your initial thoughts on it?
We talked about it on Making Tracks, and I reviewed it for the site, and I'm still working my way through it because it's not a book I want to rush. Beautifully designed, beautifully presented. I'm noted in the review just one of the little things that doesn't really matter, but they've even sort of laid all the spines out so it looks nice on the bookshelf. Just little things like that work for me. And it comes from a great long lineage of Star Wars art books. So, but yeah, it's what it's classic Star Wars. It's roads not taken, isn't it? The choices that they picked and decided on, and just looking into how they turned this film around in like 2 years and 3 months or something crazy like that. Which for a Star Wars film, I mean, back in the day, it took them 3 years. They were working on Jedi before they finished working on finished Empire. You know, it was just these monumental projects that take so long to do. There's a lot in there that makes you think, what if, what if, what if? And obviously there's, you know, external issues. Because Carrie had already passed away before they even started on Rise of Skywalker. But you know, things that they could have done. You wonder how much of an influence Trevorrow had on things. And as I say, I'm still working my way through the text of the book, so I'm sure more gets detailed in that respect. But I love the book. And like I say, we just said it, I enjoyed the film. And it is one of the Star Wars films that I'm happy to put on and watch. And I enjoy because I think they're charming actors and I enjoy the performances and the music's always great and such. But yeah, it's good. It's a good release. It's definitely, well, certainly if you've got the other two, you've got to get this one.
I actually found there was more in the book that I enjoyed than there necessarily was in the film, or there was creative choices that they made in the film that I wouldn't have made, having seen what options were on the table, if that makes sense. Yeah. And if I just pick one element, and that was Mustafar, which I'm pretty certain that 99% of us that went in and watched the film the first time had no idea that was supposed to be Mustafar.
Yeah,
and
I still struggle with that. I still think it's not Mustafar at all.
And when you actually pick
it's up... It's just the woods at the back of Pinewood to me.
And when you actually pick up the Art of Book, there was a huge amount of effort went into explaining the backstory as to why that was Mustafar and why there was a lake and why there was water, why there were people living there, and why the technology was so much simple, because these were people that had only been there 30 years trying to establish a community back again on the planet. There was these aliens and creatures that they'd all planned out, which, as I understand it, they shot some of this as well. It wasn't just a case of all this was concept and thrown away.
Yeah, loads was shot, yeah.
And effectively it was repurposed and repositioned in its place in the film, and the fact it was Mustafar really became largely irrelevant beyond the point that it had to be Vader's Wayfinder. When you look at some of the art and the ideas that they had, it just became really disappointing to me that so much of that didn't feature in the final film. And we spoke about this earlier before we came on air as well, that when you pick up the Art of Books and you see the depth of creativity that have gone into the characters, the background characters, the sets and so on, it comes back to this habit that we now have in filmmaking of shooting scenes in a dark light where you lose so much of the set and you lose so much of the characters and the creativity that are there. And it's just a bugbear of mine at the moment that this is kind of like a habit across all sort of filmmaking. That when you've got like such a rich Art of Book and such a rich depth of creativity in there, it's disappointing not to have seen much more of that on the screen.
And it's not like the old days when you look at an old Ralph McQuarrie Art of Book, and when they got to doing droids or when they got to do other stuff like Clone Wars, early Clone Wars, and they would pull from all that McQuarrie stuff. And you think now they're kind of tipping the hat to that sort of stuff. But a lot of the old Macquarie unused stuff from, especially from the Art of Jedi, ended up in West End Games books and stuff like that. It got used elsewhere. There's so much Star Wars art now. You'll 9 out of 10 pictures in that book, you'll never see them anywhere but in that book. Yeah. So it's a different world now, isn't it?
You've also got the opposite side of it. There's a lot of choices in the film that are better than what you see proposed in the art. There's always that irony to it as well, that I'm not criticising fully the filmmakers here, that they have their own creativity and style, and what they bring to the film adds something.
I was just going to ask Brian, have you got the so you've got the Korean version, have you got the standard English version?
Yes,
as well. Do they marry up? Because obviously the the first version was held back, wasn't it? And I just wondered if they omitted anything that was in that career.
I haven't gone through page by page and checked, but I noticed there is some layout to it slightly changed. I'm guessing that's more to do with to cope with the text more than anything. I haven't picked up on anything distinctly different or anything you think, oh, they were trying to not disclose this.
These art of books are basically probably the closest we're going to get to a making of book from the sequel trilogy, I think.
Yeah, I agree with that.
And, you know, as with everything, some of these kind of concepts felt quite late along the process when they're in the book. And I wonder actually, as always, you know, what conversations were had before that. But then, you know, that's just like, you know, we're always going to ask for more, aren't we? Let's be honest. So, and as you said, there's so many different iterations of stuff. It's just nice to see in the small, nice little iterations between like the different heads that like Dio had and Babu Frick and all that kind of stuff. So, and you get this nice kind of idea of actually how they had to adapt when they moved locations. So when you know, they moved certain scenes around and suddenly, you know, Kijimi has to be a snow planet rather than like a temperate planet or something like that. And how that then affects the costume department and so on and so forth.
I'd love to see a photo. You know, we had the Solo photo book that came out from Robert ILM.
Yes. Yeah, Robert O, yeah.
Yeah, I'd love to see, even if it's not a making of book, just a photo book for each of the sequels and a Rogue One one.
Exactly. I mean, especially as like, I think, wasn't it Last Jedi, Rian Johnson had his camera all the time. So you just think that, you know, he's going to get some really good candids. Plus, I mean, even just like the behind the scenes documentary on the Rise of Skywalker disc, which was so beautifully shot. They must have so much extra footage. And, you know, there would have been a stills guy probably on set for a lot of those scenes capturing stuff. Yeah, it is almost like a missed opportunity, really, to not use those stills.
Yeah, yeah, they do. They do an awful. I mean, they don't take as much. I don't think they take as many stills as they used to. I know Lucas was very up on the sort of archiving all that sort of stuff, whereas the Disney era not so much. Whereas, so I think, you know, it's certainly the prequel era films. I think they had 3 or 4 on-set photographers snapping away all the time, didn't they? But lots of blue and green and red in the background sort of thing. But, you know, but these ones, not so much. But, yeah, I interviewed Deb Patterson for StarWars.com. It's not quite been posted yet, but she said they filmed, her and her unit filmed hundreds of hours of footage because they had complete access to everything. So she was in every meeting. You know, the first meeting where it's like her and the ILM guys and Kathleen and JJ and everyone sitting down talking over the story, and she sat in on the whole thing. You know, so there's stuff out there, crazy, crazy stuff out there. So, you know, and fans want it, but just, I think Disney aren't that keen on sort of pulling the curtain to one side, like Lucasfilm would be all over it, but I don't think Disney are that keen on it. That's my read anyway.
I think that's it. I think they want to be seen to be like in control. So to speak. Not necessarily in control of Lucasfilm, but in control of the project. And so, like, to you know, as you say, pull the curtain away and maybe show, you know, a little bit extra disarray or a little bit of uncertainty by the cast or the crew and, you know, the scripting and stuff like that. That probably doesn't maybe kind of lend itself to their kind of like corporate message. I don't know. I mean, does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. Perfect sense. Yeah,
it's a shame because George would literally at Lucasfilm back in the day, you want to do a book on that? Go ahead and do it. We get some money in on that, and then it pays for more projects.
Yeah,
it was a bit more warts and all stories with the original trilogy and how hard it was, and the new ones are like, yeah, it was easy. Went and did it, and they don't explain the depths and the strains of having to make it. Whereas George was literally saying, "Well, we ran out to Tunisia again." And have the world's worst sandstorm and the worst rain and all the rest of it. And they explain all these stories, and the new one is very much of a facade.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's big studio productions, though, as well.
Yeah.
I think, I mean, it's a bit similar to, like, Marvel in that respect. You know, that's kind of tightly kept under wraps, and I don't think you get many making-of books for Marvel.
True, but I suppose it's a different model, isn't it, in the sense that Marvel will release 2 or 3 films a year, as a Star Wars movie you know, okay, we had the faux pas of Last Jedi and Solo within 6 months of each other. That was a big mistake they won't repeat, but generally you're going to get one Star Wars film a year. So it just felt the fan base could sustain it, I think, if, you know, if they went to the lengths of it. But then, you know, how long did it take Rinsler to write each of those books, for example? You know, they're not small projects, are they? You know, and even an art of book's nowhere near to the depth of a making of book, but still, no. I suppose it's a lot to pull together, isn't it?
It's a lot to pull together, but also then you've got that editorial layer as well of, like, actually, you know, I suppose if it's got to go through 3 or 4 or 5 different levels of approval,
yeah,
and it's like, you know, there'll be stuff in there that JJ really doesn't want people to know, and there'll be stuff in there that Kathleen possibly doesn't want people to know, and yeah, and even maybe, like, you know, Bob Iger, for, you know. So yeah, it's, but you never know. Like I said, I think with time, these things, you know, people kind of relax a little bit about stuff as well.
Yeah.
You know, it's, once it's released, it's out there. And then, you know, I mean, we see it when we speak to, you know, cast and crew. They're obviously, some of the NDAs have lapsed and stuff like that for the earlier films, so they can talk about stuff. And also it's out there now. It's yeah, done. So move on.
Obviously, with the whole COVID-19 issues taking over the world at the moment, distribution of comics and books and magazines have been problematic. The latest issue of Insider hasn't hit bookstores yet in the UK, but I think, Mark, you've got the inside knowledge as to what's in it.
I can speak to what I've got in it. it's a good one for me. There's an interview I did with Kenneth Colley, who recently wasn't very well, but he's on the mend, so we understand, so that's great news. Talking about his time on Empire being a 40th anniversary year, so we talk about that, and touch on Jedi as well, of course, being one of the few guys that came back. Also speak to Mark Lewis Jones, who was Captain Kennedy at the start of The Last Jedi, and that was fascinating, because he's one of those faces, you see him on television a lot, he's a Welsh actor, so you see him in a lot of stuff, sort of Channel 4 dramas and all sorts of things. And I managed to interview him and phone him up whilst he was on a camping holiday with his family. So we very kindly took 10 minutes out of his holiday, or however long it was, to chat about that. And then we touched base and gave a bit more detail to some of the stories that he told in there. So that was fun. And then it's the first part of my chat with Dave Chapman and Brian Herring. So that's a two-parter coming out over a couple of issues. So yeah, it was good fun. Lots to talk about there. I mean, both of those guys, long, extensive careers in puppeteering, completely different stories, but same end result, working on BB-8. So, so looking forward to getting my hands on that one. It was a good one to work on.
And talking of the distribution problems, Diamond and Marvel have been working together to try and get things heading back towards what would be normal. So it's just been announced that starting from May the 27th on an alternating weekly schedule, they're going to be releasing the print comics and trade collections that should have been out by now that haven't. But starting July 15th, Marvel will be going back to their usual weekly releases. So things are slowly getting back to normal. For Star Wars fans, the first print release is going to be the 27th of May, which is going to be Dr. Aphra issue 1, but it will be released on May the 4th as a digital release. So if you purchase through marvel.com, it's a digital comic store, you can pick that up on May the 4th, get your print copy from your local comic book shop on the 27th. Looking ahead, you've got the Darth Vader poster book coming out 3rd of June, Star Wars Age of the Rebellion hardcover coming out on the 17th of June, issue 3 of the Bounty Hunters coming out on the 24th of June, and the Legends Epic Collection Legacy Volume 3 on the 8th of July. And as I say, from July 15th, things should be back to normal, so expect to see announcements as to what's coming out when from July imminently. Talking of Aphra, what do you guys want to see from the series?
From Aphra, I'd like to see her get into more scrapes. I like the archaeology aspect of the character more than anything. And I know there was a few early doors, like really on the nose, Raiders of the Lost Ark, Indiana Jones sort of nods, you know, the name of the ship and different things, which can pull you out of the moment sometimes. But that aspect of it was kind of cool, because it meant that you were travelling around the galaxy a lot, seeing a lot of different places. And one thing I like in the comics is when you go back to familiar worlds. And, you know, sometimes I'll do a review and I'll just see where the planet was, and if Wikipedia's got it listed
in terms of location and stuff. So a little bit of research in that respect. I find that fun. And that kind of fits with what she does, doesn't it? You know, going off on these missions. So when she's into these sort of scrapes, it's a part of the world, the part of the Star Wars world that we don't generally get to see. And it kind of feels like it's something that feels logical, very logical within Star Wars. You know, they kind of touched on it in Solo with Dryden and all of his artifacts in his office, you know, having the skull from Lost Legacy and all these different things in his room and the dancing goddess and all that, you know. So it kind of feels like it's in the thread, and Thrawn obviously with his art collection. So it kind of feels like it's in the thread of that. And I sort of think, well, there's overlaps you could have there as well. You know, Aphra going off on a job to get some special art piece for Thrawn and some sort of, you know, this plot threads you could sort of tie together. So I think that's what I'd like to say, unless that's already happened in the comics I haven't read yet.
I've liked seeing her tie into the Bounty Hunter issue one and the Galaxy's Edge book. And I like seeing her being a more sort of tied in character. So I hope we get to see her cross over with another book again, maybe in a different era.
Yeah, I think it'd be quite... She's always quite fun when she kind of gets involved with, like, the main Star
Wars. She weaves her way in quite a bit.
Yeah, she does. She's a good flexible character like that, but you can kind of drop into the Vader comic, or you can drop into the main Star Wars comic, or what have you, and it's quite fun.
She's the Peter Quill of Star Wars, isn't she? She's the Star-Lord character.
She pretty much is, yeah. Yeah, I mean, I'd quite like to see some more Black Stanson, the... Bounty Hunter type Wookiee. Yeah. I think he was awesome. And even like her on again, off again kind of love interest, Toven, she's quite fun. Because again, you know, any character that she interacts with creates this different reaction from Aphra, because she's quite, you know, multifaceted that way. So you never get exactly the same kind of Aphra that you do, you know, when she's dealing with Vader. So it's always quite fun.
I like seeing her get with Evazian and Hondo. Previous series arc, that was really nice. You know, I'd like to see her interact with other characters we know but don't see very often, so more OT background characters maybe.
Yeah,
I quite like that. I like that little aspect of it, that they can bring in other OT characters and have a play around with them, whereas in the main Star Wars Invader book you probably wouldn't see those characters come in.
No, and if they did, they'd probably end up dead at the end of it.
Yeah, or they couldn't meet up with them because they've not met them yet.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
So she can meet characters and play around with characters in the sandbox that, you know, Vader, Luke and Leia and that can't meet again, or for the first time they can't meet because they meet for the first time at another time.
I think, actually, Mark, you touched on something quite cool. I think it'll be quite fun to see her with kind of Crimson Dawn a little bit.
It feels like it's in her wheelhouse, doesn't it? It feels like it's within her sort of world.
Yeah, exactly. Especially, you know, maybe she's either pulling off a heist for them, or she double crosses them, something like that. Because obviously at this point, we don't know who's running Crimson Dawn.
So, no, that's true. That's a good point.
That's a whole different kind of, like, that could be a whole different kind of thing right there. Well, I tell you what, it would be great if actually, you could have a buddy kind of little story arc with her and Dash Rendar. That would be quite fun.
Oh, yeah.
Got to bring Dash Rendar in. So many people would lose their minds in a, you know, obviously you had the character turn up in The Mandalorian, didn't you?
Yeah,
the gunslinger character,
A young kid, yeah.
Yeah, you know, and everyone was like, oh, it's just like a Dash Rendar character. And they basically said Dash was like their solo replacement because it's set between Empire and Jedi. But I thought Dash was fine. And I thought, I love the Outrider. We've seen it in the special edition. So bring Dash Rendar in. I'd bring all of them in. Yeah, why not?
Looking ahead to what's coming out later this month, we've touched on the fact that Dr. Aphra issue 1 launches digitally May 4th and again in print on the 27th of May. We will also see some Disney die-cut classics coming out on the 5th of May from Studio Fun, adaptations of A New Hope, The Emperor Strikes Back and Return of the Jedi. These are the classic Ryder Windham adaptations, now with art by Brian Rood. We also have the art of Star Wars Rebels coming from Dark Horse Comics. It's a name we like to see, coming out on the 19th. We have the Clone Wars Battle Tales issue 1 from IDW. Their new, I think it's a 5-issue comic book series, comes out across the whole month of May. It's supposed to, but I believe it could be delayed. Don't have quite got a release date for that. And we also have from Titan, The Mandalorian, the Art and Imagery Collector's Edition Volume 1. out of what's coming out that month, guys, what's your pick for what you're looking forward to and why?
Mando. Definitely looking forward to seeing that. I think with the Disney Plus series, we just talked about it on Making Tracks, you know, with the Disney Gallery thing starting off on May the 4th and the second episode on May the 8th. I've seen the first episode of that and it was fantastic. So I think anything that looks into the world of Mandalorian, how they made it, you know, what their mission is, and you know, and to say the first episode of that show was fascinating. So anything that shows you the development of Mandalorian at the moment is what's working for me.
Mando for me too. Mando. And I'm looking forward to the Art Rebels book as well. I really enjoyed that series, so I'm looking forward to that coming out.
No, me too. I'm looking forward to the art of Star Wars Rebels as well as the Mandalorian, I think, as well. I think off that list, that's the only two, well, barring the Afro comic, that's the only three that I would probably be picking up based on my focus anyway, I think.
One disappointment is the lack of 40th anniversary Empire products.
Yeah.
Kind of wish there was more. We'll maybe let them off because this year's been a strange one. But yeah, I think I'm looking forward to most is The Mandalorian. We've obviously got the documentary type TV series coming out on May the 4th as well on Disney Plus. So this is going to be a nice collector's edition volume to go alongside that.
This is Steve Bloom, voice of Zebralios, and you're listening to Fanthatrax Caravast. May the Force be with you.
Talking of Mando, is it something you think there should be more literature spin-offs of? Should we see some comic adaptations of episodes? Would you like to see some original stuff? Or should it just remain on TV?
Just on TV at the moment. I think whilst we're still... Because I don't feel like we know him that much better than we did when we first met him. We do, you know, we kind of get his code of honour and we're understanding about the sigil and we are learning stuff. But I think it's too early in the sort of growth of the character to give it to another writer who's got nothing to do with the production, really, that Marvel or Lucas will just sort of say, write Kevin Scott, pick a name, you write this, or write somebody, you know, just giving it to somebody without having the full SP on what the character's about. It can take the perception of the character off in different directions. That's not a dig on Kavanaugh, just the first name that came in my head. But, you know, just giving it to somebody, I think it's too early for that. I think we all, the writers and everybody else, we all need to live with the character a bit longer. So no, I don't really think we should. I think we should get at least a couple of three seasons under our belt and then get a novel come out.
I think the thing with the Mando is there's so much mystery to it still. And even when everybody around the world watched the first episode, we didn't know what to expect. We'd been given a few little teasers and then got to the end and went, wow, there's the child. Didn't know about that. Yeah. And I think there's still plenty of mystery and intrigue that's kept under lock and key beautifully well. And I respect them for doing it. That I don't want to know anymore. I want to know what the core storytellers tell us. Because with the films, you get a film come out and then afterwards you get comics and stories that tie into it because you've told everything in that plot point. But I think the Mando's got a lot more pre-planned. I think Filoni and Favreau have got, you know, I think Favreau's got a good two, maybe three season arc in his head already. So I don't want to know
that.
Anything else. I want him to tell me the story he's got to tell. And I don't want, even if, you know, I think you'll end up getting the child turning up in the IDW books or, you know, a two-page story at the end of a comic like you've had before with other little quirky things. Like those R2 tales you had at the back of the Poe Dameron comic and stuff.
Yeah.
I'd like Fat Mando to get a spin-off.
as Fat Mando.
As Fat Mando. Yeah. It'd be a great ongoing comic book series.
Fat Mando Monthly. I think that's a different kind of magazine, Brian.
Yeah. I mean, the way I see it, I mean, I think you guys are completely right. I think, really, the only kind of medium that it's really going to work in, as it stands, I think will be a comic. I think there's just not really enough dialogue to really propel a good novel, I don't think.
Yeah.
But, you know, the Mandalorian series is very visual. And possibly, maybe, you could do some fairly, you know, inconsequential kind of like one-shots if they really felt they needed to of a Mando just before or, you know,
as it stands,
we see him.
As it stands, it's the only Star Wars property not to have featured in a novel or a comic.
Yeah.
And all of them have had that treatment, whether it's been a short adaptation or whatever. And it just, there's just something in the back of my head tells me it's a nice, easy way for Disney to push Disney Plus on another platform by, let's adaptate episode one over four issues or something like that. But they've maybe missed a boat now a little bit on that as we move to series two.
I quite like they didn't do anything to do with it in some respects. I like that it was all kept completely under wraps. As a retailer, I'm like, I want to sell Baby Yoda toys now. But as a fan, I have so much respect for them keeping everything under lock and key, and every episode had lots of good surprises in it.
Yeah.
And you really didn't know anything about it, and it's kind of a lost art nowadays with the internet. You know?
Yeah.
Prequel era, we took everything George drip fed us, and you didn't really get a lot of spoilers for the prequels, to be honest. There was a bit out there and you could avoid it. The way internet is now, is everything is out there. You can't avoid spoilers. So keeping it all under lock and key and filming it the way they did, and, you know, not really a lot of anything getting out about it, was wonderful.
Thanks for joining us on Cannon Fodder. I've got no plans but work for the month ahead, but have you guys got anything exciting on the agenda before we all meet again next month?
Wow, this question. Well, 40th anniversary of Empire, so I'm determined to sit down with a big bowl of popcorn and watch Empire sometime this month just to celebrate that, because it's my favourite Star Wars film, favourite film period. So that's the plan. But other than that, no, it's ploughing on with all the news on Fantha the site and obviously bringing more podcasts out as well through Fantha Tracks Radio. So we've got another show that I'm itching to announce. Me and Paul Naylor have been working on for a while that we haven't quite got to launch yet, but that hopefully won't be far away. So we'll be announcing that on the site. Fingers crossed, by the next episode, we should have had, or next episode of Cannon Fodder, we should have more news on that. And then future stuff coming out on Fantha Tracks Radio. So there's making tracks out next Tuesday, and content from Farthest From 22 Live, which we did for the show, coming to the network. And I know Claire's working on another Planet Layer, and Greg has just recorded a really cool interview for a special interview episode of Desert Planet Discs. So yeah, plenty going on, and of course Adam's working hard at Fantha Down Under as well, so lots going on.
Me trying to find news to post on Instagram. There's really not a lot of news out there social media wise. So if you're out there and you've got any Star Wars news or something you've seen in a store, because you've actually been to one, I've kind of forgot what that's like. But if you've got any news you want to share with us, or things you picked up, or a vintage toy you really enjoy and you want to share it on social media, just drop me a link on Fantha Tracks on Facebook or Instagram, and we'll share it. And I'm just going to be working a lot and building Lego.
Sounds good to me. I'm just going to sit down. I'm going to watch The Empire Strikes Back in 4K and watch a bonus stuff and just basically just consume everything that I can get my hands on, I think.
I've got no plans beyond work. I've got a pretty heavy schedule for May. I should have been going on tour in May. I'm not. So I've overloaded myself with too much work. I've got a lot of clients who are struggling at this point in time in their businesses, so I'm helping them, and I'm hoping to get a week off in June when everybody else is going back to work. I'll be locking myself up. Thanks for joining us again this month on Cannon Fodder. You can contact the show by emailing radio@fanthatracks.com, comment on any of our social media on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, Pinterest or Tumblr. Of course, you can tune in to Cannon Fodder and all the shows on the Fantha Tracks Radio on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, SoundCloud, TuneIn, iHeartRadio, or Spreaker. You can also find us on smart speakers such as Amazon, Alexa, Apple HomePod, Google Home, and Sonos. You can listen to us in your car with Apple CarPlay and Android Auto, on your gaming console, television, and on YouTube at Fantha Tracks TV. You've got no excuse, so listen in, subscribe, give us some nice feedback and ratings, and also check out our dedicated page at fanthatracks.com/radio.
Coming up next on Fantha Tracks Radio, it's the Fantha from Down Under.